Wikipedia on the radio. Walt Teptula is the Upstate's walking sports encyclopedia. Catch him and Ramona live from 3 to 7 every day on Road Rage.
Gets me home.
The Roar, where every day is game day.
Walt Teptula Road Rage, we are back. Jeff has not joined us yet, so we'll wait for Jeff Cameron. Michael, I'm going to come to you in 1 second. Before I do that, Ramona, I went back and I listened to the Al Davis interview last night.
That old one about Lane Kiffin.
Oh, my God. It's just glorious. He had a monitor. He was putting stuff up on the wall. He was putting letters he set up that he sent Kiffin on the wall. He basically said these two things about Kiffin, Ramona. He said, you know, I knew his dad. His dad was a smart guy, and you know, and we basically wanted to like Lane. But he in his own way, Ramona, in this sort of slow talking way, he basically called Lane Kiffin a complete a-hole like 20 times, and called him a friggin' ignoramus, that he's one of the dumbest people on earth, and that by the way, he called him a flat-out liar numerous times too. He just said, and here's the evidence, and he's presenting the evidence. He's laying out the case against Kiffin. He basically said, okay, so Lane told you this, so now I'm going to present all this evidence. And he got his little pointer out, got his projector out. You know, he's putting up these things on the wall, and showing them to everybody, the letters he sent that were received by Lane Kiffin, everything else, detailing every element of the relationship with Lane Kiffin, and just saying over and over again, he's just an absolute liar. I mean, he's no bones about it. That's what he's saying. That's what he's saying. This guy, look, that's Al Davis, okay? You can go look that up. The only thing that basically he said Lane Kiffin was wrong about everything. The only thing he ever had right was Jamarcus Russell. And he didn't admit to that, but he said Lane didn't want Jamarcus Russell. So I guess that's the one thing Lane Kiffin had right. But other than that, he just detailed every single thing. And he said he didn't want to take any responsibility. He wanted to blame everybody else but himself. He's still doing that. All these years later, he's still doing the exact same thing. He's whining about the fact that they get left out going 9-3, or that they don't get an opportunity. I mean, he's even whining before the season. So he's still doing the same thing. He doesn't want to take any responsibility for anything. And then there's this. Michael, again, I'll get to you in 1 second. Get this, Ramona. These things from various sources, okay?
Okay.
Football Scoop report. LSU recruited NFL players to sue the NCAA to return to college football. Pro Football Talk. Lane Kiffin and LSU reportedly instigated the fifth-year lawsuit that created the current college football chaos and possibly interfered with the contractual rights of multiple NFL teams. I mean, he's an idiot, and he's a manipulator. That's the reality. Adam Schefter. The NFL today will provide clarity to clubs regarding league rules governing player eligibility that have been in place and remain unaltered. A player that goes back to college this season will be prohibited from signing with an NFL team this year. This gives you a little background on what the NFL is thinking and what the reality of the situation is. A player signed to an NFL contract who is subsequently cut is a free agent. He may sign with another NFL club, the CFL, or return to college, but that player is considered a free agent and will not be subject to a future draft. In other words, you cannot re-enter the NFL draft. Michael, on the Pratt Injury Lawyers phone line. Michael, good to have you.
Hey, Walt, I didn't mind holding. I was enjoying every bit of that.
Thank you, Michael.
Especially the lane bashing.
Oh.
I wanted to get in and talk Chad Morris.
Yeah.
And I've been on the fence since he was named the OC for this year, and because I have to believe he has evolved from his last year here. There has to be a difference, because there were so many bells and whistles in his offense his final year here that never equated or seemed to equate to the success of a play. And the one I'll point out in particular is orbital motion. The first game, I'm going to sit down with a coach's clicker, and I'm going to click the number of times somebody goes in orbital motion and doesn't get the ball. The whole point of orbital motion is to make the defense account for that guy, follow that guy, change their defense because one guy is going from one side of the formation to the other. And his final year, nobody ever followed the orbital motion guy, and Clemson was playing 10 versus 11 every time the wide out.
So you're saying it was
back.
All window dressing and no actual execution on it? Is that what you're saying?
Well, now I've seen a lot of teams use orbital motion in high school and have amazing success doing it.
Right, but Michael, I just want to clarify. You're saying that it was only used as window dressing and that Clemson didn't actually hand that guy the ball? Is that what you're saying?
Hand, pitch,
okay.
Throw.
Right.
It was 1 out of 10.
I'm going to have to take your word for that because I can't. I honestly don't necessarily recollect that. I'm not saying you're wrong. I swear
to it, Walt.
Okay.
It was so sparsely used that the defense just ignored that player going around the backside of the barn.
Okay.
They just ignored it. So we were playing 10 versus 11. That guy wasn't getting
the ball. Well, look, I'm sure Jim Morris has evolved and that he's a different guy. I mean, whether that's good different or bad different remains to be seen. I mean, there's been some real negative experiences for Chad Morris since he left here. In a way, nothing but negative experiences. So, now he comes home. What has he learned? How has he changed? Is it going to be a back-to-fundamentals approach? I mean, look, there are certain things that I think a Chad Morris offense is known for that I think he's going to try and exploit. I mean, first of all, let's be clear. He was brought here to establish a run game. And whether that's with the aid of orbital motion, window dressing, whatever, he was brought here to establish a run game without question. That was the big beef between Dabo Sweeney and Garrett Riley all last season. It was clear. It was discussed. Ad nauseam post-game. And much of it was just plain obvious that there was a rift there as to how the run was being utilized. So Chad was brought here to reestablish a Clemson run game. He was also brought here, I think, to get the ball to playmakers in space. And that doesn't mean you have to chuck it 50 yards downfield every time. It means you've just got to create one-on-one matchups in space, which is something that Chad always wanted to do. And now he's got some unique pieces to be able to do it. He has talent at wide receiver. He has Chris Johnson, who is a dynamic, explosive space back, a satellite back, if you will. And then he has Gideon Davidson, who I think can also catch the ball. So I think he has the weapons to try and create the one-on-one matchups in space that he wants to be able to create. And then the other part is I think he was brought here to throw the ball vertically, to stretch the field, to be able to promote all this other stuff. In other words, if you're going to run wide receiver screens, it can't just be wide receiver screens. You know, if you're going to try and get the ball to Chris Johnson in space, it can't just be that. There's got to be a complementary effort to stretch the field, to make the defense aware that you are willing and able to throw it over their heads. Whether that's completed or not is of no consequence. It really isn't. It's just that you can't let the defense play you in a 10-yard box. And there was too much of that last year. Now, in order to be able to throw the ball vertically, your offensive line has to hold up because it takes time to throw the ball vertically. So I think those are some of the things. And I also think the use of tempo, but a controlled tempo, I think those are all elements that Chad was brought here to improve. And so we'll see how that all comes about.
Okay, I've got one more point I'd like to make. If we get a running back that's popping 5, 6, 7 yards a carry every time they touch the ball.
Yeah, keep giving it to him.
Then all of a sudden, he breaks one for 34 and gets down to the 6. That running back does not need to come off the field. You go back the last 10 years, anytime a running back broke a big run, they came off the field and a guy who's been standing on the sideline gets to run it in. You know, that guy, he worked up a lather. He's ready to go. He's doing a great job. Leave him on the field.
Yeah, I mean, I think that when you have a hot back, you want to keep feeding them, especially as the game goes on.
Well, that's been a problem for the Clemson offense for quite a while. Thanks for your time, Walt.
Thank you, Michael. Yeah, I mean, I think that's obviously true. But I think Chad Morris was brought here to try and rectify some of that. Whether he's able to do that remains to be seen. But I think some of it is going to be the old stuff. It's not going to be that crazy tempo where the goal seems to be snap it 100 times and that, you know, you think that that's how you win the game. It's not going to be that. I think at times he'll play with pace, but at times he won't. I don't think it's going to be any mad rush to see how many times you can snap it. Is that my guy, Jeff Cameron? Let me get to Jeff, and we'll obviously carry him through into the next segment. Jeff, it's great to have you back. Thank you for joining us today on short notice.
Good to be back, Walt, and I apologize for the lateness of things.
All good.
Held up in my own studio, so you know how that could be.
Yeah.
But I wanted to make sure we touched base, got together for another college football season, so I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you, Jeff. Nobody knows all things Florida State football, and by the way, really well-versed nationally as well as Jeff Cameron. He's sort of the Florida State version of us, and we always enjoy having him and always enjoy these conversations. Jeff, I saw Mike Norvell in a little video question and answer session. It was only like 40 seconds, I believe, with Roy Philpott, who's a friend of mine. And Mike seemed very optimistic. I guess what I couldn't determine, I'm not a master of reading body language, do you believe in his optimism at this point, or is this a guy just taking on water and acting out of desperation? Is Mike Norvell truly optimistic about this team this year? What's your viewpoint on that?
It's interesting. I lean towards the latter, but I would say this: they ran some kids off from last year's team that I think did some damage in the locker room. Guys that, when things started going poorly for Mike Norvell and for that team, kind of they went the other direction, some of those guys, and I think they curried a lot of favor with too many guys in that locker room. And I think Mike's thought going into this year was, look, if I'm going to lose my job, if I'm going to get fired, if we're going to fail in this endeavor, I'm going to do it the way I want to do it with the guys that are pulling in the right direction with me. And, you know, it may not work out because he hasn't been a great recruiter. And a lot of the money people around here have closed their wallets to Mike Norvell because they don't believe in him. So it's not like they were able to help him out with roster construction this year.
And by the way, Jeff, that is, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's the real reason that Ashton Daniels is the quarterback at Florida State and not some other quarterback.
Sure, that is exactly right. Yeah, they weren't going to be able to swim in the same water as, just say, Miami. Very few people do. These days, but they couldn't have if they wanted to. So, yeah, I think he realized that they had enough roster spots to fill, like areas of concern to fill, that spending $3 million on a quarterback or thereabouts would have been at the detriment of trying to replace that offensive line, to bring in another linebacker, to, you know, he was looking for starters, and they were able to replace a lot of guys. We'll see how well they do. But, you know, I think he thought, okay, I need a guy that's mobile. I need a guy that he doesn't have to be the star, but I can get him to run my offense. You know, we'll be average up front, but I'll utilize his legs, and that'll, you know, change the math a little bit and maybe help mitigate the pass rush. And I do think he likes his offensive backfield. I think the running back room is pretty good. Walt, they're not bad there. They've got some players between Cromaw and Singleton. They should be okay there. They brought
Let me ask you this on that on that front. I am Captain Cromaw. Okay, I have been screaming for Florida State to hand the ball to this dude since he got there. I do not understand his lack of usage. I also don't understand why he's still there, quite honestly, because I would have thought that Georgia would have snapped him up or somebody would have snapped him up. Honestly, Jeff, I just think he's hyper-talented. Look, I like Wisner. He's a nice player. He's not Cromaw. Cromaw is 6'2", 225. He has long speed. He can make people miss in space. He's all that. There's a little bit of Marcus Dupree element in Cromaw. I do not understand not feeding him. I don't get it. It sort of drives me crazy watching it. Can you explain that to me?
No, because I asked Mike Norvell that specific question. You know, he had 72 carries last year. I would have given him the ball. He averaged almost 6 yards per carry, by the way. I would have given him the ball 150 times minimum, maybe more. He's a guy that they swear they're going to feature. They swear they're going to, you know, concentrate on two or three guys and give him the ball. And I think that Cromaw's got to be the leader of that group. I don't think there's any question. And by the way, he's also what you want him to be if you're trying to send a message as to how you're going to play, because he's very physical. And he's very tough.
Right.
He's a guy that can intimidate. He's all about the business of football, too. When you talk to him, he's a scary dude. And I mean that as a compliment. Like, that's a guy that wants to run people over, wants to hurt people when they try to come up and tackle him. So, you know, I think that's the kind of message you want to send. You want some guys like that on your team, obviously. You want a linebacker to be a little bit of a screw loose kind of guy.
But it only matters, Jeff, if you're going to give him the ball.
Right. Yeah, no, it's true. So we'll see. He swore up and down when I talked to Mike Norvell in Charlotte that they were going to do that, that he was going to get the ball more. He's had a great camp, Walt. He's been a star in camp. I mean, now I know it's camp, but there are a couple guys that emerged from this camp that, you know, they said had taken a big step forward, that had gotten more consistent on a day-to-day basis with effort and focus and all the things that coaches say. Some of it's rhetoric, some of it's real, but I think it's real with Cromaw. I don't know why it wouldn't be. He's very, very, very talented and very, very, very focused. So, yeah, I'm with you on that.
All right, hold that thought. We'll get back to that. I get to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Jeff Cameron from All Things for All Things FSU. We'll be back.
The Roar's College Football Kickoff Show is back. Join host Scott Reimer and all your Roar favorites at the Southern Weaving Food Hall, August 27th from 5 to 8 p.m. Join us at 210 Fern Street, right here in Easley. The Roar, the Upstate Sports Authority.
Hey, let me tell you about my friends at Gilstrap Roofing. They've been covering the Upstate for four generations. That's just so insane to me, Ramona. I have no idea what, there was nothing here four generations ago. You know, and yet Gilstrap was doing roofs nearly 100 years ago, which is just crazy. You want the most trusted, most experienced roofer in South Carolina, it's Gilstrap. Nobody's close. They do it all. I mean, it's the Gilstrap difference, serving the Upstate since 1935. You hear all the unsolicited testimonials, the people call and write this show, telling you almost every day on a daily basis about Gilstrap Roofing. Family-owned and operated across four generations. Good friend Jeff Cameron. Jeff, I know you're at a million places. Want to tell the people where you can be found?
Yeah, you can certainly find me via podcast anywhere you get podcasts. Just type in the Jeff Cameron Show. But I'm on 93.3 FM, Real Talk Radio in Tallahassee. I'm also on frequently with the fellas from warchant.com, and you'll find me every now and again on Sirius XM. So I'm around. You'll find me. Just type in my name and look for that ugly guy, and I should pop up for you.
There you go. Not the ugly part. We're not signing on that. All right. Jeff, I'm going back to the Cromaw thing for 1 second because I'm not done with that. Because, you know, I put out rankings every year, quarterbacks, wide receivers, running backs. One of my shockers this year, I think to most people, was I put Cromaw as the seventh best running back in America. And I'm doing it strictly based on the hope and belief that Norvell is going to hand him the ball. Because I honestly believe this, Jeff. I have him ahead of Ball of Florida. I am not in love with Ball. I mean, I know the world thinks, I saw the other day, PFF, round one draft pick. Really? I mean, okay, His longest run on the year, except for Florida State, which basically had quit, was 22 yards. That's his longest run of the year. He's a big physical back who's a 4 yards in a cloud of dust guy. Akroma, to me, has more upside than that. I just think he has more burst and more upside. But it takes giving him the ball.
You know, it's interesting, Walt. So, you know, obviously you remember last year's Florida State-Clemson game. They only gave him the ball three times in that game. Now, he averaged 7.3 yards per carry in that game. Why would you stop giving him the ball? It's been strange. You know, like even it's weird. Like he had only two games last year in which he got the ball double-digit times. Only two. Both those games he averaged well over 5 yards per carry. So it wasn't as if, you know, the load of 11 carries or 12 carries or whatever was going to be too much for him. He was playing well. The game against Virginia that they lost in double overtime, he had 12 carries and 63 yards. So it is a mystery. I'm not certain why it didn't happen more last year. I will tell you, Walt, he got asked, Mike Norvell got asked that question a lot because it is the kind of thing that flummoxed not only you, but the entire beat that covers this team.
Good.
All recognize what Kromo was. And remember this, Walt, for your listeners, I know you probably know this, but Kromo was committed to Georgia.
Georgia, yeah.
It's not like Georgia doesn't produce running backs every other year to the league, right? So they know what they're looking at running back, and they had him, they loved him, and Florida State paid a premium to steal him on signing, what amounted to signing day. And the assumption was, well, if you're going to pay that much for a running back, you better ride him. He better be the man. And so I would certainly hope that you see that this year, because I'm in agreement with you. I may not have him as the top seven back in the country, but I think his talent is immense, and I'd give him the ball a lot.
Yeah, that's why I have him there, Jeff. I think the talent is there, and I've said, and people who listen to this show know, I've said I'm giving him the ball 250 times. I'm giving it to him until he drops. And now, he's not the only offensive skill talent guy on this team. This team has talent at receiver. Deuce Robinson is an absolute freak. He's 6'6", he's 240, whatever he is. He's also pretty good after the catch. He's not just a catch point warrior. He has a little juice after the catch. There's not a body type in college football that can deal with Deuce Robinson if you can get him the ball, Jeff. There are no 6'6 cornerbacks and 6'6 safeties.
It's correct. He's got to catch the ball cleaner. He was a double catcher a little bit too much last year. That's why he came back. He came back because the NFL said, we love you, you're great, but you can be better.
Yeah.
You got to run more routes than the nine, and you got to be a better red zone target, and that means catching the ball cleaner. But all the things you described regarding his ability and his size and his play after the catch, that's all accurate, Walt. He's a very good player. Moreover, he is a returning 1,000-yard receiver, first of all. Secondly, he's a guy who, as you said, is 6'6", 240, and he works incredibly hard. So it's great when your best players are also your best leaders. He's a guy that actually cares deeply about getting better, took serious what they told him when he thought about going into the NFL, and has come back with extreme focus. I mean, this is a guy that when you talk to him, you can see that passion burning in his eyes. So you're right to go to him next, to pivot from Kromaw over to Deuce Robinson. They do have talent on offense. It's really going to come down to whether or not this offensive line's any good at all, Walt.
Well, that's what I want to ask you about next. I want to ask you about that combination of Daniels and what you've seen from him, good and bad, and then this offensive line where you have a number of pieces, a number of transfers. What are they thinking about this offensive line? What do you think about this group? What have you seen from them?
The offensive line was better last year than I thought they were going to be. Remember, they were all transfers last year as well. And Herb Hand did a very good job of rounding them into shape. Yeah, he's a very good coach. I agree with you. He did a very good job of getting them in shape and ready to roll. And so I was impressed by that. So I give him, I guess that's my way of saying, I give him the benefit of the doubt that he can do it again. But he's going to have to because, Walt, they're all new again. And they're all transfers, and like you said, you know, you can look at a PFF grade, but you don't know what the play call was, and you don't know what his assignment was unless you were watching, you know, a Stephen F. Austin or Purdue or whoever it was, one of these transfers that you know, whose games you likely didn't see. I don't know how to gauge them right now. We were basically at the end of the 2-10 season told, have a good day, the press was. Like, they're not letting us watch practice the way they used to.
Yeah.
It's very frustrating, but, you know, I'd like to lend context for my listeners. You know, hey, this is what they're doing. This is what we like about it. This is what we don't, without giving away trade secrets. But they don't let us out there anymore, save for little moments here and there where you'll get a period or two. So I would be lying if I told you I knew what to expect from them. I know what they were a year ago. I know I like Herb Hand, and I know what these guys were at their previous institutions, but I don't know how they're going to merge and come together here. I'd like to say he could muster something up, Walt, similar to what was a year ago, because if they're average up front, just average, they've got a chance to utilize those skill positions you're talking about, and they are going to run Ashton Daniels, and he is a willing runner.
Yeah, he is. He's a good athlete.
Yeah, he is. He is. And, you know, he's a really smart kid. He's a Stanford kid, and when you talk to him, he's thoughtful. He processes what you're asking of him. He thinks about it before answering. He's one of these guys that's easy to root for. I told my audience, I said, listen, I interviewed this guy for 30 minutes up in Charlotte. I said, I came away from that interview, and I tell my audience exactly how I feel about kids. You know, I'll come on the air and say, yeah, this kid's not exactly, you know, a Mensa. Or I'll come on and I'll say, nah, that kid's really, really good. This is the kid who's thoughtful and works hard and cares. And so he's easy to root for. I'll say that. I hope he has a good year. Florida State needs it, obviously. But he's put in the work. We'll see. I just that offensive line, I don't think they can rise to the level of, say, very good. Might they be average to pretty good? They could. And if they are, they'll win more games this year.
You know, it's funny, Jeff. It used to be an absolute given that continuity was essential in the offensive line and shoulder-to-shoulder games and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then Michigan, with two largely transfer offensive lines, won consecutive Joe Moore Awards using transfer players. And so I think everything in college football has changed. It's just the nature of it now, and there's sort of some of this going on everywhere. And I don't care what PFF thinks. I mean, I don't rely on the ratings of people who coloring books in their spare time. It's just it's not of any consequence to me. So, in other words, it sounds like not only are some of these guys talented, and we've talked about the talent, but it seems like they're good guys too. So there's a lot of reason for optimism there, I think. I think there's reason for optimism. And then let's flip to the defense. By the way, how much time do you have? Do you have to go?
No, we're good. Let's talk. Okay. Go ahead. Let's get to that side of the ball. I'm with you.
All right, let's take a quick break then. We'll take a break here. I'm joined by Jeff Cameron of all Tallahassee fame. You can find Jeff absolutely everywhere. I don't have time to read that whole list again. We'll talk about it later. All right, we'll take a quick break here, and we'll be back with Jeff Cameron.
The countdown is on. 10 days until Clemson Tiger football. Presented by Ingles. Ingles. Low prices. Love the savings.
At the Sellers wants to throw. Looking. Goes across the middle. Ball batted up in the air. And it's picked. Ricardo Jones at the 10. Going to take it into the end zone. Touchdown.
10 days until Clemson Tiger football. 105.5. 97.5. The Roar. Where every day is game day.
Let me tell you about my friends at Krispy Kreme. The Reese family, Anderson Spartanburg, have been doing donuts right since the 1960s. We know. We get them delivered. Things Florida State. Jeff, we were going to pick up with the defensive conversation. Tell me where I'm wrong here, Jeff. The defensive front, I think, looks solid. Looks like you have some players and maybe some depth. What about this linebacking group? Is the best player in this group Chris Jones, and where does the pass rush come from?
Pass rush will have to come from scheme because they run a 3-3-5, which is Tony White's scheme. Now, they'll flex into four-man fronts all the time, and they do these things all the time. So, you know, that's just by name.
I like White. I've always respected White. I mean, you know.
He did a good job at Syracuse, too.
Yeah, he did.
And he did a good job at Nebraska. Yeah, I like Tony. I thought he had a couple of moments last year, the Pitt game included, where he lost the plot a little bit, and linebackers got isolated.
He lost the plot a little bit.
Yeah, he did. He allowed linebackers to get isolated in coverage on very quick receivers, and it got exploited in several games last year. I don't know if that for him that was a personnel problem more than it was a scheme problem, but it can't happen. So we'll see we'll kind of see this year what he thinks about this group. Chris Jones is certainly the most productive linebacker who, you know, led the country in tackles a year ago before coming to Florida State. He's a sideline-to-sideline maven. I have not seen him have to cover anybody, so we'll see what he is in that. They really hope that Makai Bayor is going to be healthy and ready to go for this first game, and certainly by the SMU game. He's missed a little time in camp. We haven't seen him play. He's a transfer as well, and I'm kind of excited to watch him. Keep an eye on Caleb Lavallee, the North Carolina transfer. He came in from a year ago, and he didn't play because he got hurt. But this is a big, strong kid who, in his final game at Carolina, it was the bowl game. I think he had 10 tackles.
Okay.
He's 6'2", yeah, 6'2", 225. He's very active. So it'll be interesting to see if he plays a more prominent role this year. He's had a good camp. That's why I bring him up. Pass rush is a concern.
Does his brother play for Florida State, too?
Noah Lavallee is a freshman on this year's team. Yeah. So, yeah, that's right. Caleb and Noah Lavallee, they're both on the team. And so it'll be interesting to see. Caleb's the one who's got a real chance to play right now. I worry about the pass rush, but I worry more about overall depth on that side of the ball. You know, Florida State has, I think, the toughest schedule in the ACC. They play the if you look at the betting odds, Walt, the top six teams in the conference, Florida State plays every one of them. And in addition, they play Alabama. In addition, they play Florida. So this is not going to be an easy schedule. I worry about them getting worn down. If I were playing Florida State, I'd do what Florida did to them a year ago. I'd line up and run the ball right at them.
Over and over, yeah.
Yeah, I just do it over and over and over again and question their toughness. And
let me ask you this, Jeff, because I've talked about this schedule as well. I think this schedule is – last year I thought Syracuse had the worst schedule, most difficult schedule. I thought it was ridiculous. This schedule is like that. I do think there's an opportunity for some footing. And tell me what you think about this, Jeff, because I've been saying this. I think the SMU game for Florida State is absolutely vital, 100% must have. The way I view it is, and maybe I'm wrong, I don't think there's a way to recover if you lose that game at home on the rest of the schedule. On the other hand, if you flip the script and you win that game, the crowd stays involved. You get the crowd back on your side. If that game goes away, I can see the crowd totally tapping out on Norvell. And then forget Alabama. I don't care whether you win or lose at Alabama. I don't think much of them, by the way. But the Virginia game coming up two games after that, am I wrong to think, Jeff, if this team beats SMU, they also beat Virginia? If they lose to SMU, they also lose to Virginia, and then the whole thing goes sideways?
Yeah, I framed it very similarly, Walt. I said that if they lose the SMU game, we'll probably see the train come off the tracks. Because right now everybody believes and they're saying the right thing, but if you lose to the first real opponent you play at home – And remember, this really couldn't be in a better spot. Florida State gets the warm-up game.
Right.
They get to figure out their communication. They get to do all of those things. This is SMU's first game on the road at night, albeit Rhett Lashley will have them ready to go, and that's an experienced, very experienced quarterback. But it's still their first game. And you know getting to game speed takes a little bit. Florida State has a chance to win that game. And I'm with you.
Agree.
If they do win that game, I do think that they'll probably be 3-1 hosting Virginia, and you know they'll lose that Alabama game on the road. I got to believe that Alabama, and I'm with you, by the way, I don't think Alabama's a juggernaut, but I do think that they'll be out for blood in that game.
I'm taking those 15 happens. Points all day, Jeff. I'm telling you right now. I saw that line. Give me that all day. I just don't think much of them. I'm not even sure about DeBoer, Jeff. I'm not in love with him. I'm not in love with anything Alabama. I didn't like them last year. I said they can't run the ball. They wound up 125th in the nation in rushing, Jeff, and they're not going to be better in that area this year. Now, maybe Russell gives them some juice from that position as a runner, but in terms of a conventional run game, they're going to stink again. And so,
good,
you know, I think Florida State can go in there, and I'm just not sure that you can't win that game. But let's just stick to the ACC games. So you like me see it the same way. I think SMU is a winnable game for Florida State, and if the Noles get that one, I'm 100% confident you beat Virginia. You should have beat Virginia last year.
Yep.
If you get SMU, you're going to have some mojo, and then I'm I really fully believe you beat Virginia. Now you're talking about a 2-0 start in league.
Yeah, and you go on the road after that and play Louisville at
night. Yeah, brutal after that.
Yeah, it is brutal after that. What you described gives them a chance.
Right.
Here's the thing about SMU. The thing about SMU is if you win it, you give yourself a chance to have a good season.
Exactly.
If you lose it, it's probably lost. It's probably done. I think they'll get housed. If they lose that SMU game, I think they'll get housed by Alabama. And when that happens, you're right. Everybody shuts down. The fans are done.
The Virginia game. Then you certainly are going to lose Louisville, Miami, and probably Clemson after that if that happens.
If that happens. But yet, if you win that game, you've got every chance in the world to beat Virginia, Louisville. You won't beat Miami. Hosting Clemson, we'll see. I don't know what your thoughts are on Clemson. But, yeah, they could win that game. And then they should beat BC on the road. All of a sudden, you're in contention for being one of the teams to get to Charlotte. Like, you'd have something there. I don't think they will, Walt. I don't think they're a great team. I think the ceiling for this team is probably the ceiling. If everything goes right, is 8 wins, 8-4. That would be the ceiling to me because I don't think they're loaded.
Is that good enough for that? Would that be good enough for Norvell, wouldn't it?
And they'd keep him, which is purgatory for the FSU fan base.
Hey, Ramona, there's what we call the ringing endorsement. They'd keep them.
Yeah, they'd keep them. They'd keep them. And meanwhile, I'd be saying, guys, our head coach has lost 4, 7, 10. These are the last three seasons.
Hey, Jeff,
like, come on.
Hey, Jeff, maybe I should be asking you how many games you want them to win.
Right. Yeah, I've gotten that question a lot. You know, like, my dad has been a 42-year season ticket holder at Florida State. He's a Noel, and he cracks me up. He's like, son, do we need to lose 6 games so we can move on? it's kind of funny to listen to him. I don't ever root for Florida State to lose, per se, and I try to talk objectively about them when they're good and bad, no matter what they are. I don't like it's obviously bad for business to some extent. You need them to not just be irrelevant. They've been irrelevant these last two seasons. They haven't mattered a bit. There was a snapshot in time when they beat Alabama last year, where Florida State was on the minds of many a college football fan again, and you know that's where most Florida State fans believe they should be in perpetuity. But it's shortly thereafter that Virginia game when you lose that and it begins to spiral. Florida State went right back to not mattering even a little bit, and that's in the ACC. So it's hard to stomach right now for Florida State fans. They are frustrated. Mike does not have their support. They're waiting for any little thing that is further proof that this thing is done.
Let me ask you this, Jeff. If it goes sideways based on the difficulty of the schedule, et cetera, do you have any idea at this point who the next coach at FSU would be?
No, because, Walt, I think you know in this current climate, it's not what it used to be. You don't have to go get a name. You've got to have people willing to pay for your roster.
Where will Florida State be in 3 years?
Well, I have a suspicion it won't be the ACC. But I would suggest that when these television deals come up in 2030 and 2031, you know, listen, ESPN and Fox are going to dictate terms as to where anybody goes.
Yeah.
To me, I mean, what you know, I think if I were the Big Ten and I knew that eventually we were going to expand, I would attempt to get the jump on the SEC and I'd put a flagpole in the South. And that way you could be coast to coast. I'd say I want Clemson, Miami, Florida State, throw North Carolina in there if you want, whatever, and let's go. That's what I would do. I don't know that that's going to happen, and who can predict the wins these days with college football, but Florida State fans certainly believe they'll be out of the ACC in 3 years. I mean, that was the reason for the lawsuit, which they pretty much won. And, you know, they've turned around and shot themselves in the foot. You've earned the right to make more money by being a brand. You basically sued for it, and then you turned around and flew the plane into the side of the mountain. So it's something to behold what's happened with Florida State. To some extent, you can certainly blame the athletic director, Michael Alford, for a lot of things. But one thing you cannot blame him for is after going 13-0, they get snubbed. Everything goes south after that season. And Norvell, you know, he's flirting with Alabama at the time. They're figuring, well, we got to extend him. We can't let him go to Alabama, the team that they screwed Florida State over for, et cetera, et cetera. And so they sign him to that extension, and it's an albatross. It has killed their ability.
Let me ask you this, Jeff. I got to let you run, but let me ask you this. Would you consider, does it make sense to consider guys like, in if Florida State moves on, like a Rhett Lashley or a Jeff Brohm? I like both those dudes. I think Lashley.
I love both those guys. I love Jeff Brohm, by the way. I didn't love that Louisville team a year ago, but I like him as a coach.
I think his his running back room this year might be the best in the country. I think Brown and Brown are unbelievable.
Yeah, no. And of course, Florida State plays him on the road. Yep. I would consider that. I've mentioned Brown before on my show, but I think a lot of. I mean, well, we live in a world where Kurt Cignetti won the national championship at Indiana. And
Jeff, I got to run. Great talking to you. Thanks so much for all the time, as always. Thank you, Jeff.
Be well, brother. Take care.
We'll be back.
WCCP-FM 105.5 Clemson. Greenville Anderson. WAHD-AM 1560. Cowpens. 97.5 Spartanburg. We are the Roar. No scripts. No spin.
Yeah.
Just the truth. 105.5 and 97.5. The Roar. Where every day.